Hey everybody, my name is Jim Wolverton and I am the Director of Legal Education here at Kraus Financial, and I'm excited to bring you the latest elder law interview with Don Levin. He is our Strategic Relations Director here at Kraus Financial, and he works with attorneys to help them assist their clients in getting long-term care insurance in place as part of a estate plan or a proactive Medicaid plan. In this interview, we talk a lot about how those long-term care insurance policies have changed over the years, what different types of policies are currently available, what types of limitations are there around those policies, and then how can an attorney work with an advocate in the long-term care insurance world to be able to put a plan together that's appropriate for the specific client, as there are so many different options available. Then we also talk a little bit about the state partnership programs that are available in most states through the Medicaid program to increase the individual and the community spouse resource allowance for those clients that have an insurance policy in place. So please join me on this interview. It was a great conversation that I had with Don, very insightful, and I know it answered a lot of my questions about long-term care insurance. Thank you so much for being here, Don. Really appreciate it. Can you just introduce yourself really quickly and your experience with long-term care insurance?
Absolutely. My name is Don Levin. And like most of you, I have been a practicing attorney. I was a practicing attorney for 13 years in Chicago back in the day. And I was drawn into the long-term care industry about 25 years ago. And that's where I've been ever since. Everything from a producer to an agency leader a couple times to a corporate senior leader. And, a lot of people will ask me, well, did you get disbarred? Why would you leave the practice of law to become an insurance salesman? Well, for a lot of people, it's like a calling. And I guess that would apply to me too, because it occurred to me just yesterday that not only was I a caregiver for three generations of my immediate family, it's actually four. From the time I was 13 until I was 38, if I wasn't traipsing around the world with the army, I was a caregiver, a hands-on caregiver to all four of my grandparents at one time or another. I've taken care of my wife on no less than five separate occasions after surgeries and such. I helped with my adult daughter at the end stages of her life. And I have a grandson who I saw yesterday who had a 1% chance of survival when he was born. And after 4.5 months in the NICU, he lived with us for 7.5 months, and it took all four of us to take care of him. So, caregiving is something that is very personal to me. And for that reason, I liken it to a calling.
And when you're talking about long-term care and how that really fits in to this caregiving kind of theme of what you're talking about, how does that insurance kind of side fall into how are the traditional benefits of a long-term care insurance policy kind of fall into that passion that you have?
For most people, the purpose of purchasing long-term care insurance is really to mitigate risk, to protect themselves and their families, and to achieve some level of peace of mind. The number one reason, if we were playing Family Feud, that people do buy this, though, is they want to avoid being a burden on their family. And as I said, having lived the nightmare, and that's what we refer to it as, because even children who love their parents, it does become a burden. It is hard. It's hard financially. It's hard physically. It's hard emotionally. And if they're still working, it can be a real problem in terms of their employment. They may lose promotions. They may miss work. It's hard on the employer as well. Essentially, we're not the Waltons anymore. There are more women in the workplace. We have fewer children. They're scattered. And there are very few multi-generational family households. And even in my own family, I can remember going to the pool with my kids and grandkids, feeling like George Bailey. I was the richest man in the country because I had all my family around me. And I walked out with my bottle of suntan lotion and said, "Who's going to help me out?" And they looked at me and went, "Dad, gnarly, gnarly. And I said, guys, thank you. Thank you for reaffirming for me that in a long-term care crisis, you will be completely useless to me. Because if you won't put suntan lotion on me, what chance do I have that you'll bathe or toilet me? So, but besides burden, there are a number of reasons that people have shared with me over the years. They want to maintain control of their lives. They want to remain independent. They want to have access to quality care. You know, more often than not, they want to remain in their home. They're going to be more comfortable there. The carriers want to see them there because it's less expensive to maintain them there. But they want to avoid welfare. I mean, people who really honestly believe that the government's going to take care of them will also recognize that that's Medicaid. And with Medicaid, they're going to have fewer choices. It is going to be in a facility. And that facility may not be as nice as what they might want. So, but according to AARP, and this was from last year, unpaid family caregiving exceeded a value of $600 billion. So, I mean, it is a very large expense. And as I said, it can be crushing to the caregiver on so many levels. So, but access to quality care, independence, maintaining their lifestyle as much as they can, and avoiding burden. Those are the reasons people look into this and are proactive in purchasing it.
And when attorneys are counseling their clients, you know, in a proactive type Medicaid plan situation where they're doing the estate planning, they're trying to couple it with some long-term care insurance, where do the attorneys kind of turn to? Is it usually like a local broker? Is it someone like Krauss? Like, who can come in and really explain the benefits, how the policies work, and all of that? And kind of what is the attorney's role in all that?
Over the years, my preference, and I think the preference of the attorneys and financial advisors I've worked with, the preference is to have a local long-term care insurance advocate, a professional insurance producer who does nothing but long-term care insurance, to basically become their strategic partner or in-house specialist. In fact, at one time, I think I was in-house specialist at six different firms in the city of Richmond. The client views that as an added value that they can receive from the law firm, but it's about asking some basic questions. I mean, the attorney does not have to be an expert in long-term care insurance. Some basic fact-finding questions, ascertain what the needs are, what the desires are, you know, part of the annual review or whatever. And then letting them know that they do have somebody in-house that they can meet with that can specifically tailor a plan that will fit their needs, wants, and desires. One size does not fit all. And because of the advent of new products in the industry, the clients have a much broader array of options available to them. And frankly, it does take an expert to explain it.
Can you talk just a little bit about what some of those options might be that a client would be considering when they're talking about purchasing the right policy for them specifically? Like you said, one size doesn't fit all.
I mean, depending on their finances, their own family situation, obviously, people who are single, particularly women who are widowed or never married, the LGBT community, you know, where there aren't children per se, family history. You know, if you have, for years, the carriers collected this data anecdotally. Now they use family history as part of the underwriting process. So, you know, if you have one or more parents or grandparents that have a history of Alzheimer's or stroke, whatever, that's going to impact the writing decision on the applicant. But the advocate can, in fact, design a plan and tailor it to fit the needs and wants of the client. Obviously, if they have a family history of Alzheimer's or stroke, it's going to dictate the nature of the plan. So because those maladies can, in fact, have a client suffer a prolonged, we're talking 10, 15, 20 years of care. You know, if it's available, a lifetime plan is great, but plans are typically purchased in 2, 3, 4, 5 year increments. First, we're going to ascertain how much coverage do they want? How much of the risk do they want to shift to the insurance company? You know, $100 a day, $300 a day. That's going to become their daily or monthly benefit. We're going to take that, multiply that towards the benefit multiplier, which is the length of the plan.
Okay.
That's going to create a pool of benefits. We're also going to offer the client the ability to purchase inflation protection. You know, if we're talking to people in their 40s and 50s, right, as right. we hopefully are, and claim is going to hit around 80, you know, we don't want to lose ground over the years. So some level of inflation protection, which is important because of the potential for partnership. If they're a couple, we might want to offer them a joint plan because okay. they can share the pool of benefits, which means they don't each have to buy a large pool on their own. They can share this larger pool.
Gotcha. So
it's about creating flexibility, creating options for these folks. But we want to guard against the rising costs in the intervening years. And again, one size doesn't fit all. So we try to tailor the plan to fit their scenario.
Okay. I know when I first started in this elder law world, there was this kind of a negative almost connotation around long-term care insurance where it was, it's only use it or lose it. If you don't use it, then you could lose it. But I know over the last 10 years, that's changed a lot. And there's become a lot more flexibility in these plans. Can you talk a little bit about kind of that evolution from just that standard product over to some of these more creative products, for lack of a better term?
Absolutely. 2024 is the 50th anniversary of the industry. You know, at its inception in 1974, these long-term care plans were basically nursing home plans. You know, they were for old people.
Right.
And you went to the nursing home to die. You didn't come out of the nursing home typically. You know, they were for the catastrophic illness. Well, long-term care impacts people in their teens, in their 20s. I have clients that fit that. You know, I have agents who have family members who've been in care since high school because of a car accident, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. or a chronic illness. So it's not just for seniors. It's not just the elderly market that should be looking at this. There's a 70%, I used to say chance. Now I use the word probability. There's a 70% probability that if you reach the age of 65, you're going to need some level of long-term care before you die. If you're part of a couple, that number goes up to 90%. If you're a single female, it's 79%. Those are horrible odds. But back in the day, you had the option of the nursing home plan. That quickly evolved into home health care, assisted living, adult daycare, group homes. And more of the carriers are becoming very flexible in providing care under some other provision of the plan. You know, they really are, almost without exception, bending over backwards to provide benefits to their policyholders. Now, to your question of, well, what if I never use this? Did I waste the premium? And, you know, why do people buy any form of insurance? It's to mitigate risk. And I used to ask people, when I didn't have an alternative, are you going to feel right. bad if after 40 years of insuring your house, it never burned down and you never got to file a claim? And of course they say, well, no, of course not. That means they had a good life. Well, for the naysayers or those who believe that they are going to be in that 10%, or they're going to go face first into the oatmeal, or like grandpa dropped dead in the parking lot of Kmart of a heart attack, as my wife's grandfather did, we have other non-traditional products that combine life insurance and annuities with a long-term care rider. So I've never met anybody who wants to debate the fact that they're going to die. They'll concede that point to me. So we have this mantra of live, die, or quit. So they buy this policy that has the life insurance or annuity provision.
Sure.
With the long-term care rider. If they live and they do, in fact, require care, the benefits for long-term care pay out. If they die, either before exhausting or after exhausting the benefit, you know, there's going to be a death benefit or a residual death benefit and a cash value attached to the plan if they'd never used the long-term care. Or if they just simply change their mind and they want their money back down the road, they can quit. So live, die, quit. So we have that flexibility. For those who believe that they can self-insure, which is quite the myth, because even if they have a fair amount of wealth, what we've been able to ascertain over the years is their long-term care costs more money because they have a higher standard of living. They don't want to sacrifice that standard of living by going into care. So if they're at home, they're going to have more care brought in. Or if they go to a facility, it's going to be a nicer facility. They're probably going to want a private room as opposed to sharing a room with somebody that they've never met. And as a result, they're going to incur greater expense. But for those who honestly believe that they can self-insure, but they'd like to protect the portfolio, then an asset-based product where they basically shift some assets from the left corner of their vault over to the right corner of the vault, it's kind of like a stop loss for them because the, you know, for example, if they were to deposit $100,000 into an asset-based product and they go into a care situation, the first $100,000 of benefits that they receive are going to really be the return of their own money. But okay, if they go beyond that, you know, they may receive an extra $500,000 worth of long-term care benefits. So it's a stop loss. So at that point, they're insuring their portfolio as opposed to themselves. And, but as I said, we've had clients go into care in their teens, their 20s, their 40s. Sometimes they come out of it. Sometimes they don't. And so as a result, you know, long-term care insurance is for everyone. And it should be part of a smart financial plan.
Yeah, and that's a lot more options than was traditionally explained to me when I first got into the elder law world. I know that different states have been trying to incentivize folks to purchase some of these insurance products through these state partnership programs. I know it's a deep topic, but can you give me just kind of a high-level overview about how these are designed and then how they're functioning?
Partnership is awesome. That's all you got to know.
Okay. Good. Next question. No.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to the industry, but more importantly, to the general population. It's basically a reward for those people who are proactive and seeking to have a solution for their own. Medicaid is the single largest payer of long-term care in the country. Even after 50 years of the industry being around, market penetration is still, you know, in the 10-12% range. You know, there's a myth that the government's going to take care of me. Well, no. Medicare does not take care of long-term care. Yes, there are instances where you can get up to 100 days of care. Government's going to pick up the first 20 days in full. After that, there's the copay. But in reality, the average recipient of Medicare receives about 17 days worth of coverage. And if they don't have the money to pay for their own care after that, yeah, they'll go on Medicaid. Medicaid is federally and state funded, state administered. And every state's version is just a little different. What they have in common, besides the federal funding or co-funding, is it's the number one line item in their budget. And it's hemorrhaging money. And the states that are on the verge of bankruptcy, it's typically because of Medicaid. So over the years, Congress has enacted legislation, initially started in four states, California, New York, Indiana, and Connecticut. And it was called partnership. And basically, partnership was just that. It was a partnership between the insurance company, the policyholder, and the state and federal governments. And what it primarily allows a policyholder to do is to shelter dollar for dollar. So for every dollar that the carrier sends off in benefits, policyholder gets to shelter a dollar of assets. So even after exhausting the plan, and all the benefits attached to it, they could go on Medicaid without having to incur the spend down. Now, the states vary and what the amount they are allowed to retain, but in most states, it's between $2,000 and $3,000. Gets a little dicier when there's a community spouse. You know, they get to keep the house. Some states will limit the amount of equity that they're allowed to retain. One car. That's why you see a lot of Jaguars and Maseratis in the parking lots of nursing facilities, because there's no limit on the value of the car. But again, you don't want to bankrupt or impoverish the community spouse. So partnership is essentially the reward for being proactive. And the beauty of it is that they get to shelter that part of their estate, leave it to their spouse, leave it to their family members, whatever, you know, in basically leaving their legacy intact and still maintaining their eligibility for Medicaid. Now, what we have to remember is that partnership protects assets. It does not protect income. And there is a threshold, again, state by state, as to what the applicant can maintain as income, which is one reason, you know, the Medicaid compliant annuities are so popular in the estate planning world, elder law world, because it does allow people to qualify for Medicaid without having to incur the spend down.
So with these partnership programs, what's generally, and I'm just trying to put some dollars and cents to it, what's generally the value of one of those policies that you'd be able to increase the resource limit? Are we talking a couple $1,000s? Are we talking hundreds of thousands of dollars of assets that can then be protected without having to go through the spend down?
I mean, for example, if you're talking to folks in their 40s and 50s, and they buy a very modest traditional long-term care plan, let's make it a shared plan. So they're going to share the pool of benefits, you know, 3% inflation, but a robust enough daily benefit that they're going to not have to subsidize that too greatly out of their income. You know, the average household premium is about $3,500 a year. So you're talking $300 a month. And let's say we create a pool of $300,000 with that plan. And their estate is valued at $500,000 at the time that one of them goes into a care situation. So we want them to use the carrier's money first. And so that's why I prefer to build shorter, fatter plans. So shorter in length, but larger dollar value, because we can stretch that plan out. You can't reel it in and borrow from future benefits. So we exhaust the $300,000, and now they need Medicaid. Well, assuming that they are going to have to spend down some portion of that $500,000, they won't have to go any lower than the $300,000.
Okay. So they're able to increase their resource limit to $300,000. Assuming that was spent out of the insurance policy.
Correct. In fact, I know a lot of people, myself included, who have added the long-term care, the value of the long-term care policy to their portfolio. You know, and when you have over $1 million worth of available benefits, that's a heck of a pool to draw from.
Right. Thanks, Don. That's really helpful to kind of put some dollars and cents on that. When we're talking about attorneys that are looking to add this service to their client base, and let's say they don't have a local advocate that they can work with, and they want to reach out and work with you and your team and our folks here at Crouse, what's the process for that?
Ideally, we can match them with somebody in their community. When we can't, you know, even prior to COVID, we were doing a lot of virtual selling of this product. People just don't want you coming into their home. Or, you know, if husband and wife are working and they're available during the day, but they're in two different locations, you know, a Zoom call is great.
Okay.
And, you know, because you can still communicate with one another, you can still watch body language and such. So, but we have a very large advocate force available, you know, licensed in all 50 states. And so essentially, an attorney does not need to be an expert on long-term care insurance to be of service to their clients. You know, they need to be aware of the risks that we've talked about thus far and how we can mitigate those risks with some form of long-term care insurance protection, whether it's the traditional model or a non-traditional live, die, quit product. We want to mitigate the risk. So an attorney can use Attorney Access, which is our platform. They can call in and talk to one of our staff members who can advise them on available products. But more often than not, we're going to just marry them up with an advocate who can be there, then become their in-house expert on long-term care insurance. And again, because one size does not fit all, we're going to tailor that plan to fit the needs of that specific client.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks so much, Don. Is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have asked that you'd like to cover before we wrap up?
Yeah, you know, I've probably the biggest cost of waiting and being a procrastinator, it's not money, it's typically eligibility. And Susie Orman, who a lot of people follow faithfully, she, in fact, in 2000, she was actually hawking long-term care insurance on QVC. True story. She always advocated people look at it by the time they're 55. She waited until she was 57 and was declined for a condition that she developed when she was 56. So in her mea culpa to the Chicago Tribune, she said, had she followed her own advice and purchased it prior to 55, she would have coverage today. This was at the same time that she was paying $25,000 a month for her 97-year-old mother's care down in South Florida. So my mantra is, while you pay for this with your money, you buy it with your health. And the older somebody is, the less likely that the carrier is going to offer them coverage. Could be a minor condition. Now, without sounding like gloom and doom, there are some conditions where the carriers have become far more liberal because of advances in pharmacology and medicine in general. You know, if somebody has high blood pressure, but it's stable, it's not an issue, they're going to get coverage. Because the carriers have millions and millions of years of policy data now. They know what they can safely insure and what they can't. Obviously, the longer somebody waits to look into this, you know, the product is priced based on attained age.
Okay.
So somebody who buys it at 40 is going to pay significantly less over the course of their lifetime than somebody who waits till they're 60. So, but the big discriminator in all of it isn't finances, it's their health. And so it literally pains me when I sit with somebody who wants it for all the right reasons, because they took care of mom at the end of her life, but they waited too long and now I can't qualify them for health. That's where some of these other products do come in handy. And typically, you know, the Krause advocate is going to have something in his or her bag of tricks that we can give, that we can afford them some level of coverage, even if it's not a true traditional long-term care product.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Don. Really appreciate that. That's very, very helpful.
I think that's enough.
Thanks so much, Don.
You bet.